Welcome to the Guns and Yoga podcast. My name is Wendy Hummel. Today, my guest is a former coworker of mine, Police Officer Nate Schwedahl. Nate has worked for the Wichita Police Department for the past 23 years and started the agency's HOT team, which stands for Homeless Outreach Team. Nate is also now a consultant to other agencies looking to implement a HOT team and the author of a new book called Rooster, What a Homeless Man Taught a Cop, which he co-wrote with his childhood friend, Mac Severns. Nate and the HOT team have helped over 1,200 homeless get into permanent housing, contributing to an 86% decrease in the area's chronic homeless population. I always knew of Nate's work with the team, but between our conversation and reading his book, I was in awe of his dedication, vulnerability, and courage. Nate and the agency's HOT team have been interviewed by the media locally and nationally over 50 times, acquired multiple awards and recognition on the federal level by the COPS Office and the United States Interagency Council on Homelessness, using their model as best practice. Nate openly talks about his personal growth and his transformation from leading his team in arrests of primarily homeless individuals and his realization that the system was broken and how he came to understand that he couldn't arrest his way out of homelessness. He decided to find a better way and to help solve this significant community problem. Nate discusses his own path to educating himself about the homeless community, engaging with community organizations that serve this population, and the time that it took to build trust and relationships. What I admire so much about Nate's story was his persistence and willingness to do something new, which isn't always easy, especially in a profession where out-of-the-box thinking really isn't the norm. Nate speaks to the challenges he faced with coworkers who didn't respect the work that they were doing and couldn't see the big picture, and how this proactive response was not just humane, it was actually lowering the numbers of vagrancy calls that officers had to respond to. Nate is known throughout his homeless community as Officer Nate, and his reputation precedes him. When he engages with the homeless community, they respect and trust him immediately, which he attributes to helping a leader in the homeless community named Rooster early on. He ended up being the inspiration for Nate's book. It has taken grit, time, and dedication to establish his reputation, but absolutely worth the effort. Nate recounts numerous stories of those that he's helped in the book, which often brought tears to my eyes. While many homeless individuals often struggle with addiction and mental health issues, this isn't always the case. Through stories he shares, Nate made me understand how being unhoused for an extended period of time and transitioning to living surrounded by four walls can be a challenge. For some, it's even a protective mechanism. One woman told Nate that if she remains homeless, she can't fail. Nate and his team are often the last hope for these folks, and his tenacity and servant's heart is evident. But Nate will admit in his book, this dedication took its toll on him personally. Something that we often discuss on this podcast is the trouble that we can get into in our first responder professions when we overinvest at work. It actually comes at a cost. Although Nate was doing amazing work, he speaks to the impact that the long hours and compassion fatigue he experienced in working with others' trauma, addiction, and mental health issues affected him. His physical and emotional health suffered, and despite having an amazing and supportive wife, it strained their relationship. Nate began to notice the thread of helplessness that he felt as a young child begin to surface. He discusses the relationship he had with his late father and how his relationship with Rooster taught him to forgive. I don't want to give it all away, but it's a heartfelt and amazing story. Perhaps one of the stories from the book that hit the closest to home was Nate's relationship with a man named Jose. Jose was a police officer that sustained a brain injury because of a failed suicide attempt. After experiencing significant trauma on the job that went unaddressed, he lost his family and attempted to hang himself. The time that I spent speaking with Nate and reading his book had a profound impact on me personally, and one that I really didn't expect. The countless touching stories of those that he and his team helped deepened my understanding of this population and how one person truly can make a difference. When Nate talked about the resistance he got from coworkers and his efforts to create something new, the long hours that he put in as he was building the program, it really struck a chord with me. Negative comments from others and the long hours of time, effort, and energy in building a wellness program, while absolutely rewarding, came with burnout, isolation, and imposter syndrome, which is probably why I admire Nate so much. What he did was hard, and I don't know many people that would have stuck it out. I recently developed a course on building a wellness program from the ground up, which I'll share more about in a future episode, but something that I discovered was the law of diffusion of innovation. It's a theory in social science, one of the oldest around, developed by E.M. Rogers in 1962. It explains how over time an idea or product gains momentum and diffuses or spreads through a specific population or system. When applying this to the HOT team or a wellness program as a new idea and program at your agency, you won't achieve success or what they call stickiness until 15 to 18% of your agency buys in. If you ignore this and focus on the masses, it's not enough. The theory goes on to categorize innovators, the small percentage of those out-of-box thinkers like Nate, the early adopters, those that buy in pretty quickly or right away, then the early and late majority who are the largest group, and then finally, the laggards. While it might seem counterintuitive, if you focus efforts on those first two groups, you will achieve the tipping point or that 15 to 18% necessary for success or buy-in. Whether you're tuning in just to listen or you're someone trying to do something new at your agency, understanding this theory can be really helpful. One of the quotes that Nate uses in his book is from Albert Einstein. Anyone who has never made a mistake has never tried anything new. Enjoy the episode. Welcome to the Guns and Yoga podcast, Nate. I'm so happy that you're here.
Awesome. Glad to be here.
Yeah. So for the listeners, I have known Nate Schwedahl for quite a while. He's been a police officer with the Wichita Police Department for 23 years, which is the agency that I retired from. And Nate is doing some really, really important and inspiring work. And that's what we're going to talk about today. He's written a book. But before we get into that, Nate, welcome to the show. And could you tell everyone just a little bit about your background, why you decided to be a police officer?
Why did I decide to be a police officer? Well, yeah, like I said, I've been a police officer for 23 years. You know, I think the reason why I wanted to be a police officer was a little bit of the excitement and do something different every single day, not just sitting in an office, you know, listen to, you know, the copy machine run. And I think at the end of the day, the most important thing was to help out our community. I almost joined the military. I chose not to and go to school and then wanted to be good in law enforcement. But it really was about improving the quality of our community and giving back. And I think that was the most important thing for me.
Did you, or were you the person that knew from a young age that you wanted to be a cop, or was this something that kind of morphed over time?
Probably morphed over time because I had this stupid passion where I wanted to play in the NBA and be a professional basketball player. And then I stopped growing at 6 feet. So that wasn't going to happen. interesting story. And I know a lot of people know this. When I was in preschool, not even kindergarten, preschool, they had a police officer who came to our school. And it was like a career day and like wanted to introduce kids about their profession. And he spoke with us and like put our teacher in handcuffs. And I don't know. I just thought it was really cool. And I think that's probably where the passion probably started. But as I got older, you know, I started thinking about things. I got into acting and wanted to pursue that. And then I think I just got a little bit more realistic. I was like, you know what? Go back to my roots and what I dreamed of doing. It was doing law enforcement and giving back to the community and helping. And I think that's really what I wanted to do.
Okay, so hold on a minute. You said acting. I did not know this about you. So let's talk about that for a minute. What was that whole acting piece?
So I had a bunch of Best Actor awards in high school and was in a lot of plays, and I got a scholarship at Wichita State University for acting. So I did a semester of that, but that lasted like 1 year. And then I realized, you know what, this isn't realistic. I need to do something that's, number one, giving back to the community and fulfilling like that. And then also knowing that I have a guaranteed paycheck. So this is just a little bit more realistic to go into law enforcement.
So after deciding that you were going to shift gears, what did you do for the rest of your time at your university? Did you study something different or did you?
Yeah. So like I was double majoring in acting and also criminal justice. And then I dropped acting all together and just went full blown criminal justice. So.
Gotcha. So graduated from Wichita State University, which of course everybody in Wichita knows where that is. Mm-hmm. And I think other people across the nation might know Wichita State now because of the show Ted Lasso, by the way, but I digress. I don't know do you watch that show, Ted Lasso?
No, but I know about it. Yes.
Yeah. So Ted Lasso is the coach of the soccer team, even though he's never been a soccer coach. And they referenced that his experience came from being a football coach at Wichita State. So,
yeah.
But anyhow, so you studied criminal justice, and then is that shortly after that is when you joined the police department?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I worked a little bit on parole. I was a parole officer for Department of Corrections for a couple of years first, and then got on. So I didn't get on until I was like 25.
Yeah. Okay. And so the reason why, you've got a lot of interesting things throughout your career, but the primary reason why you're here today is to talk about the work that you've done on the police department that led you to author a book that you've recently released called Rooster. And, you know, what I want to say before we get into that is that, you know, this podcast is, you know, all about first responder wellness typically. And so this is a little bit different, but as I started thinking about it, it really isn't, because when I didn't read your whole book yet, but I've read the first 65 pages or so, and I haven't told you this yet, but when I started reading the preface over the weekend, I get up early every morning. I have my little morning routine. And so I spent about 30 minutes at first reading it. And the preface, for those obviously that are listening, is written by an individual named Mac that you knew growing up. And when I say that again,
he's my co-author as well.
Okay. So, and he's your co-author. And so when I read it, I got kind of emotional because I could kind of hear him talking. It's just the way that it was written, even though I was reading it, talk about you and your passion for the work that you do. It just really, really resonated with me because there's so much important work that needs to happen. You know, obviously my passion is taking care of the people like you that do this important work. So I just wanted to let you know that really stood out to me. And as I started reading the book more and more in your words, it just, you know, I always knew what you were doing, with the work that you were doing with the homeless. But I've never really heard the story of, you know, your background, where you started from, how that all ties in. So I just want to let you know that I'm really, really glad that you're going to be talking to other people about the work that you do, because it really came through in the book right away for me how truly passionate you are about serving the community. Because you hear a lot of cops say, why do you get in law enforcement? Oh, I want to help the community. But I can say that you mean it. And I just kind of wanted to start there. So maybe you could just kind of go into a little bit about the book, and we'll kind of start there, because I feel like that's a good place to start with all of this.
Yeah, you know, I kind of talk about it a little bit in the book. It's interesting. I grew up in West Wichita. I never met a homeless person before. That's not why I joined law enforcement. That it's not had. that wasn't my calling. It really was. I loved working the streets, arresting gangbangers, and going to jail, blah, blah, blah. It was a great time. I felt like I got thrown into it, you know, just, I think, you know, maybe God or whoever, whatever you want to believe in or think, just kind of sometimes pushes you towards a certain path. And I found myself working downtown Wichita, like right out of the academy. It's not somewhere I picked. I didn't even know there was one-way streets. Like I was, like, I remember like day one when they sent me downtown right out of the academy, I didn't know there was one-way streets and I'm driving down the wrong way. And like, people are like honking at me in a cop car. And, so when I first met like the first few homeless people, I was kind of like weirded out or like, what the heck? I was like, there's homeless people in Wichita. Like, that's how, like, I had no clue about what I was doing or what, homelessness was. But 23 years later, it's been a learning curve, and I found myself kind of, you know, thrown into that environment and just learning about homelessness, a lot of the misconceptions that people have, I had, and I think it was a huge learning curve and learning process that I went through. And so what I wanted to do, especially with this book, was to see, you know, show people I'm not proud of who I was before and the lack of knowledge that I had about homelessness, but I was able to transform myself and learn and be a better person and learn about the homeless community. And I think I want to give that back to people and you know, I want people understand like that law enforcement has a position in doing outreach and being involved in the homeless intervention process. And I think that's important, you know, to understand and to believe that we should be involved.
Yeah. And thank you for that. So, and I think it's so, I mean, I appreciate your openness and vulnerability in saying, I'm not really proud of what my views were, what I thought, but here's what I learned. And that's what really stood out when I first started reading the book too, is, I mean, I didn't know you had those beliefs or thoughts or feelings initially. And so maybe without going too much into detail, because we want people to buy your book, of course, could you maybe give an example of some of those things early on? Because, you know, like you said, you grew up sheltered. I mean, I live on the same part of town that you're referencing you grew up. And although we may see homeless people from time to time now, out in the west part of Wichita, it's nothing like what you're describing, where they primarily congregate and live downtown. So can you give us an example of maybe like a call or something where you had some contact with homeless individuals, and then maybe at what point things started to shift for you?
I talk about this in my book. I mean, obviously, I spent, when you read the book and you talk, you'll see me as a younger officer when I write some of the chapters, and just, you know, there's nothing that I'm proud of, but I led our department in arrests and tickets, and it was just me arresting homeless people over and over again, taking them to jail. The next day they would be right back out because it's for small vagrancy type crimes. And then we would do the same thing all over again. And at the time, I thought I was doing something good. I'm like, I'm making all these arrests. I got good reviews on my, you know, evaluations and everything. But I think the big change came when I got out of patrol and went to community policing. And I started to look at really like, what am I doing? Like, how do we improve City Wichita? And you know, what... 5, 6, 7 years of me arresting homeless people all day long, did it solve the problem? Did it make homeless people go away? No. In fact, it actually increased and we had more issues and it didn't do anything. So what I realized is that I wasn't going to arrest my way out of homelessness. So when I started to look back at why I wanted to be a police officer, and it was about improving our community and helping and changing, that's not what I was doing. It wasn't working. I had to try something different. And I think that's when I started to think about, you know, understanding the homeless intervention process and how can law enforcement be involved to make those changes for the better? And that's when I kind of started to change my view about homelessness and how law enforcement can be involved in that process.
And, you know, you were receiving accolades and good scores on your evaluation for doing these things. So it's not, I mean, this is something that was encouraged, is for you to go to jail, get stats. And I think anybody in here who's listening that's a cop can relate. You're supposed to go to jail especially as a new officer. You're supposed to make felony arrests and go to jail. And so to that point, I mean, I think that's very relatable. And then for you to realize at some point, you know, what am I doing? You know, insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. Right. And so at some point you realize that, what am I doing here? And so once you came to that realization, what was the next step for you?
I think it was me trying to humble myself and realize that what I was doing wasn't working. And then I needed to have a different perspective and humble myself enough to know that what I was doing was wrong and it didn't work. And once you do that, then you can open yourself up to learning and trying new things and educating yourself. And that's what I did. And I went and I joined multiple agencies and homeless agencies and went to their meetings and just started learning and educating myself and being humble enough to be open to understanding the big perspective. Because what a lot of people do is they try to put homelessness and the problem in like a little box. And they're like, oh, well, it's just a bunch of people with mental health issues. Okay, well, that's true, but there's more to that. Then there's other people like, oh, they're a bunch of drunks and addicts. That's why people have homelessness. Well, it's true, but there's also a little bit more than that. So it's a holistic point of view and like a very diverse, and like you have to open your brain up to understand the dynamics of homelessness. And it's not just this little, you know, little box you can put everything in. And I had to humble myself and open my brain up to be able to think of it outside that. So,
yeah. And I mean, kudos for you for doing that, because like you said, you had to humble yourself and kind of check yourself like, well, wait a minute, maybe what I've been doing isn't the most humane, for lack of a better word, or, you know, decent thing to do, or the way to deal with this. And you knew that there was a better way. You just maybe didn't know what it was yet, is what I think you're saying. And at the time you're referencing, so this is about after 5 or 6 years of being a police officer, you go to community policing. And then at some point you start going to some of these meetings with nonprofit organizations, other organizations in the community. What was that like? Because I have a little bit of experience with some of the organizations that you're referencing. Were they welcoming to law enforcement back then? I know that things are much different now, but what was it like back then when you first were bridging this world and trying to learn more?
Well, I mean, let's be honest, a lot of, you know, agencies, especially when you're talking about homeless agencies and providers, they're a little bit standoffish towards law enforcement. And all they knew about me was I was this police officer who went out and arrested homeless people all day. And then all of a sudden I want to sit in their meetings. I mean, I could see them being hesitant, not wanting to trust us. So there was a long time of trying to break down those barriers and get that trust from the providers. You know, I remember just sitting in the back of meetings and no one wanted to talk to me, and they just wanted to complain about police, you know, and I just had to sit there and take it. But that's okay, because we had to build that trust up and eventually build that partnership up. And I think our homeless outreach team, when we first started, started to do that, because it said, hey, we admit that we did something maybe not the best, but can we work together? And this is what we're going to do. And we actually want to start helping the homeless and work in partnership with you. And so I think that was the first bridge that kind of helped break the ice and we started to move forward. But definitely for years, they didn't like trust, you know, law enforcement and trust us. And those are some barriers that we had to break down.
Yeah. I mean, it takes time to build relationships, no matter what segment of the population you're really talking to. I mean, you could say the same thing about just even being a new recruit or a rookie on the police department. It takes time for people to trust you, to build relationships, let alone these two completely different worlds. So I can't imagine what that was like. Was there kind of a cheerleader or somebody that you, and you don't have to say if who the person is necessarily, but people that were early adopters, what were you were trying to do that really saw the benefit? Or did it take time for everybody to kind of see the benefit?
You know, it took a little bit of time, but I will say that based upon the training that I went through, a lot of other agencies had a lot more barriers. I remember a story from, well, my trainers that taught me out of Colorado. When they wanted to start this homeless outreach team, they walked up to the homeless shelter and they said, hey, we want to start this homeless outreach team. And then they walked up with their arms around their chest and they said, you're not coming in here unless you have a warrant.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And that was the end of that. And so it took a long time for them to build that partnership and that relationship. The good thing is when I was in community policing, I started to slowly, during the first few years that I was working and meeting with a lot of these agencies, I started to slowly build that partnership. So when we actually went live with HOT, I went and talked to the director at the Union Rescue Mission. He invited me into his office. We sat down. I told him what we were going to do and that we actually wanted to focus on helping homeless and getting them connected to their mission and what they were doing to help the homeless and having us be, you know, kind of an outreach partnership with them. They had open arms. They were in love with it. They loved the idea and they supported us. So it actually worked out pretty good, building those partnerships up through community policing, that once we went live, it actually worked out really well, working with all the agencies. They actually accepted us and took us in. We also went out and went around and got endorsements from all the agencies and also the homeless shelters. I even did a PowerPoint presentation with the homeless to say, hey, I know we were writing you guys tickets for jaywalking and everything else. It was like, this is something else we want to do and try to do something different. And they had complaints about what we were doing. And then they said, we're in favor of you guys doing that. And so when we got endorsement from the homeless population, the shelters, and the providers, that's when it really steamed forward. And we all started working together.
And I want to make sure that people who are listening kind of understand really what you're saying here, because what you're talking about is you created something brand new that hadn't been done before. So this took a lot of dedication, a lot of sweat, a lot of research, a lot of creativity, innovation. I mean, so not only did you have to build those external relationships and get buy-in, but you had to do the same thing from within. You had to convince the powers that be that you wanted to create something brand new, because it sounds like, even though this started with community policing, you created a HOT team. For those that don't know what that is, homeless outreach team, which required a whole new set of officers strictly dedicated to doing the work with the homeless.
Yeah. There's a chapter in the book. I mean, I don't want to spoil it for people who want to read, but it's called The Shark Tank. And, basically I had this, police homeless outreach teams at the time in 2011 was a new concept. Now pretty much every agency has a police homeless outreach team in some fashion, but back then it was kind of a new concept. And, you know, I brought it to our command staff. I wrote a policy and procedure and SOP, worked with the law department on our camping ordinance. And I walked in there, you know, and I had the chief of police who had 40 years on at that time, and all these other captains and deputy chiefs. And I'm sitting there, you know, only been on at that time 10 or 11, 12 years, and telling them that, hey, I got this cool idea. And it was very nerve-wracking to say, you know, hey, I got this cool idea of a homeless outreach team. You guys should go along with it. And I thought I was going to tank my career and get made fun and laughed at. But luckily it worked out, and they gave me a shot and gave me a pilot program, and it ended up turning out good. But yeah, it was taking a big risk, that's for sure.
Yeah, it takes a lot of courage to do that. I mean, it's one thing to come in, be a cop, do your job, and that in and of itself is an admirable, profession. You know, even though I did it, I really respect and appreciate people who still want to do this work. But it's entirely another thing when you have to stand up in front of your peers and your leaders and kind of pitch something that's never been done before. Because that's not something that we often do in careers in law enforcement, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's tough to put yourself out there, and that's normally not what we do as police officers. I think it worked out well, but yeah, it was a risk.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And so, once you got the approval to move forward, what did it look like in those early stages?
Chaos. a lot of work. We were a pilot program, so it was still a lot in the developmental stage. We actually didn't even start the ordinance until like 6 months later. So I was still meeting with the law department and writing all that stuff out. The media was great, but they were showcasing us a lot because it was a new concept and we're working with homelessness, which was good. So there was just we were extremely busy. We also only had at the beginning we only had two of us, and we needed four, which is what we have now, four officers. And so we were extremely busy. The amount of calls that started coming in through our phone, it was just nonstop. I was answering phones in the middle of the night, and like it was just it was extremely busy. I was working so much more. I was actually working for free a lot of times on the weekends, not even charging the city or putting in for overtime, just trying to make sure that it was successful and keep up with everything that was occurring.
Yeah. And that speaks to your passion and dedication for what you were doing. So what does it look like today? So you started that, back in 2011, it sounds like when all this kind of kicked off, and now fast forward 2024, I know that this is going to be a hard question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. What is it like if somebody had to say, okay, give me an elevator speech, a pitch about what is a homeless outreach team do today? What is a day in the life look like of an officer that might be assigned to the team?
I think at the end of the day, our number one goal, obviously we're law enforcement, and so we're just like any other special agency, we're trying to manage an issue that 911 gets dispatched to. And people can sit there and say, hey, we shouldn't have police doing homeless outreach, but that's not realistic. Because at the end of the day, when someone calls 911 because they have, a tent set up in front of their doorway at a business, they're not going to send a social worker. They're going to send law enforcement to go address that. And we have two options. We can, tell the person to leave and kick the can down the corner. And then the next day we get the same call. And the next day we get the same call again. At some point, where do we figure out how to stop that cycle and, maybe help that person get off the streets and into permanent housing. And studies have shown there was a study done by the University of North Carolina Charlotte that showed if you can get a homeless person off the street and into permanent housing, it reduces their vagrancy arrests and issues by 84%. So from a law enforcement perspective, you can talk about, you guys are just sitting there, go arrest people and blah, blah, blah. But if we have a study that proves that this option actually helps law enforcement better and works better, then why aren't we doing that? Right. So that's really, what we're doing we're only four officers. We have like 600-700 police officers on our department that go and arrest tickets, write people tickets, take people to jail. We're four officers trying to do something a little bit different to break that cycle and just kind of do a non-traditional type policing, because sometimes the other side of it, a lot of times it works, but sometimes it doesn't, especially when you're talking about homelessness, those vagrancy type crimes. The traditional enforcement typically doesn't work as much, and we see that nationwide. Other cities like San Francisco and Portland, they tell their police officers to not do anything and not arrest any homeless people, and don't address it, don't help them, don't do anything, and they have a homeless crisis in their cities. And I think we need to be involved, and we have to address those issues, but just look at it from a different perspective. And that's really, you know, at the end of the day, what our team does.
Yeah. And it sounds like from just knowing you and talking to you about this in the past, but from reading the book, it sounds like not only do you have a really great reputation in the community and with these homeless organizations that you probably work with on a regular basis, but it sounds like you have quite the reputation within the homeless population or community yourself. I think everybody, they refer to you as Officer Nate, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it was funny. There's a, what it's, and you probably read it, one of the chapters, the first homeless lady I ever helped when we started, we were still a pilot program, is like day one, and I went underneath the bridge and I talk about this, you know, and she ends up asking me what my name was, and I was like, well, I'm Officer Sweetall, blah blah blah, and she's like, what? She's like, what's your first name? I was like, Nate. She's like, you should go by Officer Nate. I was like, your last name's Clark. Yeah. I was like, okay, I'll go by Officer Nate. And so it ended up sticking. And so the whole community knows me by my name, which ends up being good, because like, well, I've ran into people with even the other homeless outreach officers, and I never met them before. They're homeless. And they're kind of rude or, you know, standoffish. And I say, hey, I'm Officer Nate with the HOT team. I'm like, oh, you're Officer Nate? I've heard about you. And it happens all the time. So ends up being a good thing, because it's, you've built clout or guests or whatever, where just your name and the fact that they know about you can break the ice. And then you can start working with people and they start to trust you more, whereas they wouldn't have before if we were just regular law enforcement officers. So it's been a really good thing to have that name recognition and be able to break down those barriers with our homeless population.
And, you know, you should be really proud of that. And I hope that you are, because you've worked really hard for that. And that's not an easy population to break into.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you're dealing with people that have mental health issues, substance abuse issues, and, you know, just being able to, you know, have a little bit of street cred, I guess, you know, out there, it goes a long way.
Yeah. And so I want to kind of transition now into the book a little bit more. I know we've been talking about it quite a bit. You recently released it. And like I referenced in the very beginning, your co-author, which I apologize, I didn't know that initially, wrote the preface. And do you mind speaking to a little bit, without giving us too much, about your relationship with your co-author and how you got reunited with him?
Yeah, it's actually crazy story. And I mean, you'll, you know, when you read the book, you'll hear it a little bit more in depth about it, but it was interesting. He was actually one of my best friends in high school and middle school. And he lived right down the street from me. And, we were great friends. And then after, high school, we kind of drifted apart. I went to college, and then he ended up was trying to go to California, for an arts degree. And we split apart, and I never saw him for a long time. There was a time I was at the jail booking someone else in, and he's sitting there, and he got a DUI and right before he was supposed to go to California for an arts degree. And so that's kind of how we saw each other again. And, you know, we kind of chit chatted a little bit, and then I never heard from him again. I started our homicide outreach team. He started to message me on Facebook Messenger a lot. And then we were talking back and forth for about a year. Come to find out, the entire time he was homeless and he was too ashamed to tell me. And he finally came out and said he was homeless and he wanted help and he wanted to meet up. And so we ended up meeting up and I started helping him with some programs. And he ended up getting out of his homeless situation. He was alcoholic and he got the treatment that he needed. And he was doing great and phenomenal. And he's actually on Amazon writing a lot of short stories and everything and for magazines and everything. So he's actually a really phenomenal writer, which is why he helped me with the book. So it was just an interesting dynamic of how we ended up meeting up. And then now he's helping me, you know, with the book.
Yeah, that came full circle, didn't it?
Yeah.
And so Mac is his name, your co-author. You guys also talk a lot in the book about, obviously some of the things that you went through to, you know, to build the HOT team, but there's also some reference of a lot of, I mean, you've helped so many homeless people. But one in particular that I just want to ask you about, because it is the title of your book. And so, I don't know if this is going to spoil anything, but the name of the book is Rooster. And it's because it's the name of an individual that was homeless that you talk about in the book. So do you mind speaking to why you decided to have that as the title of your book and maybe speak a little bit to who Rooster is, if you can?
You know, Rooster was one of the first homeless that I helped. I think it was so early on. We're police officers and we're trying to do this homeless outreach thing. And, you know, a lot of the homeless probably didn't respect us or what we were trying to do. And so I knew that if I was going to help anybody, if I helped the king, the leader of the homeless, that would probably, you know, send a domino effect. And a lot of the homeless people that would want to work with us and trust us. And that was Rooster. He was the king of the homeless people. And so went out and then finally met him, built a really good rapport with him. And, you know, we ended up literally becoming friends and we still talk daily. Like literally, I can show you my phone right now. We've been texting. And once we helped Rooster get off the streets, he was an alcoholic for 20 years and get off, and all the officers were completely fed up with him. They, you know, they'd arrest him for drinking in public and then he'd get back out and go back to the park and start drinking again. And so once we helped him and stopped that, the number one, the officers believed in what we were doing and what it was working. I think what was more important is helping Rooster is that the rest of the homeless fell in. Our phones started blowing up overnight once we helped him. And it worked. And that was, you know, really what happened, you know. And Rooster, obviously we're friends now and we still talk. He's involved in a lot of, city housing, meetings and agencies. He's a past person with homelessness so that he's on a lot of boards now and everything. So he's just been a blessing for us and working with us. And that's at the end of the day, he taught me about forgiveness, and I don't want to go into the end of the book. I want the readers to understand that, but he taught me a lot about forgiveness. And throughout the book, it starts to talk about that and what happens towards the end of the book.
Oh, well, I can't wait to read the rest of the book then. So maybe after we record this, that's what I'll do for the rest of the night. So I imagine, though, since he had been struggling with alcohol for so long, that it's not, it took a while probably to get through to him. And so it just speaks to the challenge of the kind of work that you're doing and your tenacity and the other HOT officers, because I'm guessing that you want to help people, but they don't always want the help and it takes a while.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Well, first of all, even with Rooster, you know, if you think about it, he's 20 years of alcoholism. they don't change overnight. It was a big learning curve from a lot of different perspectives. And number one, the average alcoholic will relapse 7 times before they actually recover. And I can tell you that even when we were working with Rooster, he relapsed pretty much 7 times. The other thing you have to take into account is when someone's been homeless for 20 years, they become institutionalized, meaning that, you know, being in a home with walls around them is not familiar. They almost need the sounds of the streets and to help them sleep. And so putting them into an apartment can give them a lot of anxiety or even PTSD or something, and they're not used to it. So there's a learning curve with even getting them housed when they've been homeless so long. So there's a lot of things that I didn't understand or know as a police officer that I had to learn and understand, whether it's, you know, the addiction process and how many times they're going to relapse and not giving up. You know, it's easy for cops to go like, oh, well, he decided to drink again. Forget it. Let's give up. And you can't do that. You got to allow them to get back on that horse and keep trying and don't give up hope. And so we constantly have to understand that sometimes, you know, even homeless people, they're not ready to even change their lives around or get clean and sober. You just have to wait for the moment. And what we've learned is sometimes it's maybe, you know, they got robbed, you know, or it's super cold and they are almost froze to death. And they're like, that's when the moment and they're ready for change. And they call us like, hey, Officer Nate, I was like, I'm ready for help. That's the moment. That's, you have to cling on to that and take that opportunity, because they weren't ready for change. They were choosing to do it. They didn't want to change what they were doing, but you just wait. And then eventually they come to that moment.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely the relationship building in the long game, like you said earlier. One of the things that you said that just, just really is something I've never thought about before. So I'm really glad you brought it up, was the institutionalization. I've never really thought about that perspective before, that they're so used to being homeless that it can be really difficult for them to actually live surrounding with four walls. It made me think of, and I, you know, this is different, but it made me think of when I worked in the DV section as a detective. And you had so many cops and detectives didn't understand why maybe somebody would continue to go back into an abusive relationship, because they couldn't empathize and understand what that person was going through. So hearing you say that is really interesting, because I don't know that that's something that many people know about the homeless population.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's, you know, one of the other things is, it was interesting dynamic to learn about that and so the institutionalization of homelessness and, you know, them being around that. The other thing, and I talk about a little bit about my book, there was a chapter called Teresa, was actually the first person that we helped. And one of the things that we learned is that people give up hope, and they, you know, a lot of people say like homeless or choose to be homeless, but what I've learned is like they've given up hope on like everything. Like if they try to get out of their homeless situation, or they try to get up their substance abuse or whatever, and they fail, it makes them feel bad about themselves. So once they choose to be homeless and not try, they can't fail because they're not trying anymore. So they've given up hope. And so that was an interesting thing that I had to learn too, is sometimes they've just given up hope, and that's why they continue down the same path. And sometimes, you know, we have to be their cheerleader to give them hope again, or pull them through and say, hey, you can do this. I know you gave it up hope, but let me help you through this. And then eventually they get hope again.
And that's, I mean, that is huge, because it sounds like, you know, they get into this mindset where it's almost like they're protecting themselves, because they don't, like you said, I mean, they're afraid of failure. This is what's safe and comfortable for them, because it's what they know. So they're not willing to go out and do something different or to, you know, that's outside of their comfort zone. And so to have somebody like you and the other members of the team to come in and remind them and even encourage them and be their cheerleaders is, I mean, that's really, really inspiring and impactful work, Nate. I just want to let you know that what you're doing really is making a difference. And I'm proud to know you. I'm proud that you do that for the Wichita Police Department.
Oh, thank you. You know, and it was interesting. There's another chapter that kind of talks a little bit more on this, and I'll let the readers read it. But one thing I didn't realize is that law enforcement has a really, really, really strong impact psychologically on people. And that can be negative. It can also be positive. Negative, meaning when the things that we say towards people and citizens, it actually goes a long ways. And then positive too, like when we say something and encourage people, just the uniform and the respect and the things that law enforcement has, it actually can be a psychological effect. There's actually studies on it that prove it. I didn't know that until I got into this. And so we have to be, as law enforcement, careful on the words that we say, but also use it as a tool to encourage and help people and, you know, move in the right direction as well.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And, you know, even just the story you started with in the beginning of our conversation about the impact the police officer had on you as a young boy, I mean, that's something that has stuck with you over time. So just that like revealed itself in real time. So how that makes so much sense.
Exactly.
So if there's anybody listening, because a lot of people listen from all over the place and they're interested in perhaps learning about how they can bring a hot team or something similar to their agency, if they don't already have it, like you said, a lot of agencies have it. What would be something that they could do? Can they contact you? You mentioned, you kind of referenced that you learned this model from someone else.
Right. I'm actually a consultant for an agency, safenight.com, or you can email me at blueline.llc2047@gmail.com. And, you know, we train other departments and agencies, all over the nation, train multiple agencies. And, you know, it's my passion. I love, helping other departments, you know, do what we do. Police homeless outreach teams, you know, has been around for a while now, but there's a lot of agencies that are still trying to start some more ones or improve the ones that they do have. So, that's really, really what I like doing and consulting and helping other departments.
That's great to know. Do you have a website, or for now, just the best thing to do is for people to email you?
Yeah, just email me or go to safenight.com and then to inquire about us and see what we can do to help you out.
Great. So as we wrap this up, I just want to make sure there's something I didn't forget to ask you, or there's something that you didn't want people to know about the homeless population, about your book, or about anything that we've talked about so far.
Say that again?
No, I was just asking if there's anything else that you wanted the listeners to know about the homeless population, about your book, or about creating a hot team, anything that I didn't necessarily ask you or we didn't speak to that you want to make sure the listeners hear.
I think a big thing that people always ask when presenting is, hey, should we give money to the homeless? You know, what should we do? Because we want to help. And I can tell you there's a study done where they interviewed 200 homeless that were panhandling. And out of the 200, 93% admitted, and these are the ones that admitted, so it's actually probably higher than that. But they admitted that 93% of them admitted that the money went to drugs, alcohol, and tobacco. Mm-hmm. And so as law enforcement officers and a homeless outreach team, we're trying to break that cycle of addiction. And so when you're giving money to those homeless people, and we know that 93% of the time it goes to drugs, alcohol, and tobacco, you're hurting all the work that we've done, you know, working with Rooster and working with all these people, and you're just causing their homeless issues to even become worse and enabling that behavior. And so we asked, hey, please don't give money to the homeless, give it to those agencies that are out there, whether it's United Way or, you know, the homeless shelter or whatever it is, and give those agencies that are using those dollars so you know that they're going towards helping the homeless and not enabling them and making their problem worse. So that's kind of my big soapbox right there.
Well, I'm really glad you said that, because I forgot to ask you about that, because that's a conversation that I have with my kids a lot. Because when we see homeless people, whether we're driving or, you know, depending on the situation, I know what you just said because of the work that I do. And I will tell them the very same thing because they want me to stop. They want me to give them money, especially if you're stopped at a light. It's kind of awkward. There's somebody standing there. But I've told them the same exact thing that you just said. I still don't know that it's going to help people not do that, but I think it's important to get that message out for sure. So thanks for bringing that up.
All right.
Well, Nate, it has been so great to talk to you. I appreciate, again, all of the work that you do. You should be proud of the work that you've done. The Wichita Police Department is so lucky to have you. And I mean that, and I know that they know that. And the community is really lucky that you're around, and just keep doing the great work that you're doing.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate being on this. And you know, support our local business. Go to Watermark Books to buy the book if you're interested. Rooster, What a Homeless Man Taught a Cop.
Great. Is it available on Amazon too?
It is. Yeah, it's actually on Amazon and also Watermark. Yep.
All right. Well, I will make sure to put all of those links in the show notes, and so everybody can go grab their copy.
Awesome. Thank you, Wendy.
Thank you. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please give us a review, share the episode, and subscribe to the podcast. And remember, we are better together.